Today's very short reading from St. John's Gospel focuses our attention on our Lord's new commandment. As I have loved you, so you should also love one another. Our Lord upheld all the commandments of God in his preaching to his disciples. Famous passage where he says that I came not to abolish the law but to fulfill it, and not one part or smallest part of the law will pass away until it all is fulfilled. And yet, in addition to the natural law and the commandments that are written in our heart and mandated by the revelation of the Old Testament, our Lord gives us this new commandment of love. And not just any kind of love. We know that that word today means a lot of different things, and very often it really has nothing at all to do with what our Lord speaks of in the Gospel, and is entirely inconsistent with the love or charity that our Lord speaks of. It's a very specific and different kind of love, a love that only can be practiced in the state of grace. It's a gift from God, because as our Lord tells us, it is his love. Love one another as I have loved you. And that's not just a commandment given to us by someone who stands at a distance and says, you know, this is what you have to do, and points his finger at us. On the contrary, our Lord became one of us. He shared our humanity. He brought divinity down to earth and into our own lot, our own state of affairs. And he has united himself with us. We are partakers in the divine nature through baptism. We share in the divine life. And so when our Lord says to us, love one another as I have loved you, it's not just an example. It is that. He showed the apostles. He lived with them for 3 years, and the things that he said to them, he realized in his own person. You know, he walked the walk, and that walk ultimately led him to Calvary. And so when he says, love one another as I loved you, as he does in this particular gospel, which takes place during the Last Supper, you know, he's leaving them with a context in which they are to understand his passion and death. That's how our Lord loved us. He loved us unto death from the cross. And yet it's not just an example. The crucifix isn't just, you know, something that we place on the wall and, you know, look at it and say, gee, God has loved me this much. But it's also something that we enter into. We also come before the altar of our Lord, and we see the Eucharist. And we do say, yes, look how much God has loved me. But the Eucharist comes to us. Jesus comes to dwell with us, not just in this room, in this sacred space, but in the sacred space of our own bodies and souls. He comes, he longs to dwell with us. He feeds us with himself and makes it possible for us truly to love one another as he has loved us. It's not just an example. It's something that our Lord realizes in us through his presence in us. And this is certainly what he was trying to communicate to his apostles before he died upon the cross and at the moment that he instituted the Eucharist and the sacred priesthood. And so, you know, the standard that our Lord gives us, you know, in a sense, is infinitely higher. It's kind of funny today. You know, people oftentimes say, incorrectly, of course, that the Beatitudes is the new moral code. You know, the moral code of the New Testament. The moral code of the Old Testament was the Ten Commandments. And the moral code of the New Testament is the Beatitudes, as though we've superseded the Ten Commandments and we really don't need to worry about you know, not stealing, not commit adultery, not honoring our father and mother, or on the other hand, honoring our father and mother. We don't have to worry about those things now. We just live the Beatitudes. This is completely false, of course, because the Beatitudes are the fruit of living the commandments. The Beatitudes are God's blessing upon us. God's blessing upon us for having done the right thing. We will be, you know, we will be blessed by God if we are poor in spirit. He will give us the kingdom if we are poor in spirit. But the fruit of that blessing is the fruit of living an honest and upright life in the presence of God. So that's a false concept. But so far from our Lord lowering the standard when he says he gives us the new commandment, as though we can love one another without observing the Ten Commandments, he raises the bar. He raises the bar. But at the same time, he gives us the strength to live his commandments out of love. Ultimately, that's what we're supposed to do. The Pharisees didn't have love in their hearts. You know, they thought they were righteous men because they could look at their lives and they could say, I did this, I fasted here, I washed my hands, I did this, I did that, I'm better than the next guy. They could see it all laid out before them, and they judged by their own corrupt hearts that they were better than other people. And of course, that was false. They had no love in their hearts, and that's why they rejected our Lord when he came to them, because they had no real charity. On the contrary, the love of Christ gives us the strength to do the right thing and to do it for the right reasons, not to feel as though the law of God is on us as a burden, that the church is always telling us what to do, but that God has loved us so much that he has revealed his wisdom to us. And he has given us the strength to live a life that is pleasing to him out of love for him. St. Paul tells us in his writings that, you know, he juxtaposes the law and the spirit. But he's not saying, you know, that now we live in the spirit, we don't no longer have to live under the law, but we are free now to live the law because we have the spirit. We're free to do it out of love. We don't have to see the law as parameters on our freedom, but rather as his blessing, God's blessing, and the opportunity that we have to love. You know, those who truly love and love generously, of course, like our Lord, like our Blessed Mother, like the saints and the holy martyrs, found every opportunity to do something for God and neighbor, found every opportunity to suffer something for the one they loved as truly that, an opportunity, not a burden or a chore, but an opportunity. And it's difficult for us to see that. You know, we don't like work sometimes. We don't like to suffer. And we see limitations on our freedom and the burden of having to do difficult things is truly a burden. But if we love as Christ has loved us, that burden can be lifted from us and we can find joy. You know, there's nothing more joyful than a generous heart. Nothing more that brings more peace and tranquility than a heart that is free of selfishness, that a heart that is free of self-concern and, you know, constant looking at oneself and thinking about what I don't have, what I can't do, you know, what somebody, this person is doing to me or what that person is doing to me, but rather, on the contrary, that sees all of these things as an opportunity for us to show the Lord how much he loved us. Nobody has more to complain about than our Lord. You know, we have our little ambit of social interaction with people, and there's all kinds of people in our life, and some of them we like, some of them we don't like, some of them treat us well, some of them don't, and we can complain. You know, we can tend to say, you know, this and that about this other person. When we think about it, though, our Lord has everybody to complain about. And he sees not only the things that are external, He knows each and every one of our hearts. He knows every malicious thought. He knows every impure thought. He knows, you know, every lack of generosity that goes to the core of a person's being. He sees everything. And all of it is offensive to him. All of it is offensive to him. And yet he loved us, not because we were his friends, but because he was generous. He made us his friends. And he called the apostles his friends at the Last Supper, even though, you know, in a couple of hours, they were all going to run. They all ran. And he was deserted by them, by his friends, who he had just celebrated the first Eucharist for, who he was just about to die for. They all deserted him. And he knew it. It wasn't like, you know, at the Last Supper, he didn't know these things were going to happen. When he called them his friends, he knew what they were going to do. He knew they were going to betray him. And yet, you know, he did this for them. And so our Lord, you know, let's remember this context. It's the Eucharist. It's the Last Supper, the first sacrifice of the Mass.